information, you can visit kpft.org to learn more. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide. You can also find KPFT on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. Now we start something else.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings, humans or non-humans, or whoever you may be. Welcome to Knowledgy Bites.
Are we missing some tech? We have Lee. Lee just rolled into the studio.
Yeah, I did, yes.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, and it sounds like we've got Pete, too.
You do? So do we not have the J part of Lee?
We are flying in... missing geek formation.
Headless formation. We are server only. There's no KVM.
Our arms are flailing.
If you want Jay Lee, you're going to have to VPN into his front yard and the pretty photos that he's taking from not being here.
Just check his Facebook feed.
Pro tip, if you play hooky, don't post pictures of you at the beach.
Yeah!
Spring break reference.
There you go.
Feeling
so actually, no one's playing hooky. No one's playing hooky. We're not playing hooky.
Well, I mean, we don't think he is. He said he was.
Well, I mean, you said he was feeling under the weather, but if you're on the Earth and the weather is above you, then you're under the weather, technically.
Engineering.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I see what you did there.
So, yeah. Vitals. Pete, you want to?
Well, I guess one thing before we start is I don't know if there's anything Flicky can do to adjust it, but the sound coming off to me is very soft.
Have you checked your ears?
We're kindler and softer without Jay Lee.
The volume levels on my stuff is all pretty well maxed.
Tell me, does this change anything?
Whoa! I think you just hurt Flicked's ears. Everyone, step away from your radio.
Evidently
while we
not.
Conduct.
No, it hasn't changed anything.
Okay, what about now? Tests.
Stop poking.
Is it louder now?
Oh.
No.
Better one
or B?
Yeah.
Or better two.
A or B?
Before we run out of time,
A
flipping the better
or
knob.
B.
evidently,
I can't control it from here.
I'm gonna try one other trick. Maybe I can.
One weird trick.
Yes, number 7 will make you blanch. I don't know.
I'm gonna have to Google that reference.
The Golden Girls?
What does a blanch sound like?
There. Let's see. I'm just trying. Changing the input volume so that maybe that will get more volume to me from the computer that we're going through.
Computer.
We should let people know what they're listening to.
What are they listening to?
And who we are.
Who are we?
Other than the one or two show. It's the optometry show.
If they're tuned in, they know.
Yeah, I suppose
it's
so.
A perfect
yeah,
show.
Okay. Well, I guess so we don't have Jay. So.
FCC and all.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, and the show that you are listening to is Technology Bites. In case you didn't notice from the flawless beginning to up to now portion of the program,
it's just how we roll.
We just played the intro 5 times on loop. It's so completely fine.
Yeah, and to get our deets. You can go to geekradio.com and find out a whole lot about us. You can see pictures, you can read stuff, you can get podcasts.
Facebook, are we on there?
We are on Facebook.
That's and the Twitters cool. too, right?
We have a link and we have our Facebooks are also available from there. You can get onto the IRC. And which is Internet Relay Chat. And if you have a client for that and all that, you can go to irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
And if you don't have an IRC
Tech
client
Bites.
Or don't know what that is, you can go to the website and we have a highly secure, approved by Apple and the FBI Java app that you can use if you feel so inclined.
Trademark, at least it's not Flash.
I'm not sure which is worse at this point.
Flash, I don't think, has been intentionally backdoored by the government.
No, but didn't they just have a massive zero day just last week or
wasn't
something?
Wasn't in air quotes. I have no idea. Someone's got to bring me up to speed. I've been too busy at work, but I hear that Apple's being compelled to hand over source code.
Not yet.
No, but I mean that's lining up. We don't have to go to
that.
But I would like to.
We can get
talk
there
about that at some point tonight.
Because they need the. Well, we'll get there.
We need people to. If you haven't seen the John Oliver thing, we can. Can someone do a really weak British accent?
Oi.
Okay, there we go. Lee's got this. All right, back to you, Pete.
The issue is that Apple doesn't want to give it the key to FBI. The FBI wants the key.
It's really more cocky.
Oh, that's awesome.
Proper.
A lot more Idris Elba than...
He's going to be in some Barney Rubble.
Technology Bites, brought to you by Mary Poppins. And chimney sweeps everywhere.
Step in time. A spoonful of sugar.
Hi, Jay.
Yes. Okay, So, the other thing at geekradio.com is we have the, we've linked all the different stories and news sources and stuff that we're going to use for the program. So you can follow along or you can like use them to make up your own show. See, we're kind of open source, right?
That's kind of what we're doing. Just don't take our time slot.
Make up your own show.
And practice more than we do. Please be more polished.
There you go.
We're already basically through the entire agenda for the show too. So we really are going to be pants seat
right, flying. You've been listening to 90.1 FM Technology Bites.
Hey, where are my pants?
I'm Flicked.
I'm Barrett.
Now, Freeform Jam. Yeah, if you've seen, if you remember, Spinal Tap. Everything falls apart. They go to Freeform Jam, and it's terrible.
I wrote some source code I'd like to read in binary.
None.
It should fill up. That should take us past the 9 o'clock hour. Just let me know when.
As black as you can get. There's none more black.
Vogon poetry.
Worse.
So I guess, we have Lee back.
Yes.
Apparently we have this thing where we can only have we always have to be one person short now for the foreseeable future.
Well, and my excuse last week, we can talk about it very briefly.
I want to talk about it more than briefly. I really
do. Do you want to do this later in the show or what? I can tell you my
excuse. There's so much to talk about.
My excuse last week was we at my day job got involved with a pretty lengthy, almost all day long conversation with none other than cybersecurity legend John McAfee, a.k.a. the guy who has the same name as that software that you can't uninstall from your laptop that came with it that you really hate and you're not sure what it's
Although
for.
He said he hated that part of it. He got out. But he was the first man to ever write an antivirus program. Well, actually, market and get it out there.
This
he's worth a lot of money.
This is back in the day, too. McAfee is a very old, very famous name in security circles. And it is worth knowing, and he'll tell you, too. It's all over the... There's a YouTube video all about this, actually. He has nothing to do with the McAfee antivirus product as it exists today. It's
he
long
sold
since
sold it.
Been,
yeah, yeah, a while ago.
Long since been out of his control. But he's a sort of a cybersecurity, like, guy without portfolio. He was... And I don't want to get this wrong, so I'm going to...
As long as you say allegedly...
I'm going to hedge my language.
I think it's all okay.
He was allegedly involved in possibly a murder, but possibly not.
A neighbor.
Go read it on Wikipedia. Anyway, and he is currently...
He had to flee the country, Belize, while the police just wanted to ask him some questions. He felt, and we'll probably get into this when, maybe. Not,
I don't...
No spoilers.
Sounds like you know it more than I do,
No. But, yeah, so he fled the country. He felt like he wasn't going to get a fair shake by the Belize, I guess, authorities.
The Belizean.
So this was the great part. While he was fleeing the police, he posted, like, a lot of pictures with him toting guns, toting other stuff, while fleeing the country, kind of taunting them. And I want to say he even had a couple of Vice reporters along for the ride. So all this is very well documented while tweeting, while everything else. So it reads like not a comic book, but it reads like something that isn't quite... real.
It's a larger than life tale, and he's a larger than life kind of guy.
Very much so.
And although Lee's actually talked to him.
Yes, I have.
Barrett and Jay have probably been in closer proximity to him.
Right. Well, he's at DEF CON. Like, I think he's at DEF CON basically every year, and we've got pictures.
He was there last year, and they had like a meet and greet at.
it only descends
into insanity and madness.
No, it's the appropriate amount of seediness for Vegas and hacker culture, I think.
The whole deal was John.
Interesting guy. So super interesting guy. Has no qualms about going on the lam. Will do what it takes. Has made his own fortune. Lost fortunes. Made fortunes again. Rebel, and then. Gets on the phone with you.
Yeah, he talked to...
You gave him your phone number first,
I did. Actually, it wasn't... He talked to me and... He talked to my security guy, Sean Gallagher, and I together. And he actually... Like, Sean called him, and then conference called me in. So he didn't actually call me specifically, but I was on the call with just the three of us. And the whole reason why McAfee is currently in the news. I mean, he's running for president under the Libertarian banner, I think.
Yes, he did. He declared, I think, like December, January,
something like that. And he's on the news a lot. He was just on CNN and or Fox News talking to the FBI about the Apple versus FBI encryption thing. And
he came down a different side than I thought he would.
Well, he's got a very. I mean, well, his whole point is.
So first of all, how does he win?
His position is that his position is actually very alarmist, and it's by allowing he says by allowing if Apple were to cave to the government, that it would basically be the end of modern technology and InfoSec as we know it. It would be like the door would be kicked open, and like the Gozer would come out like in Ghostbusters.
Oh,
and it
see,
would be this whole horrible.
I thought
thing.
He wanted Apple to do it one time.
No, he absolutely
misinformation.
Absolutely does not. He is 100% against it.
Okay,
but
that's what I expected.
No, he said what the FBI should do is let him do it, and he'd do it for him this time.
Oh, that's right. He actually said, "Yeah, decapping the resistors going
in."
That's not
what he said at first.
The first thing
we are so all over the place.
John McAfee said about this entire issue was that. And I don't want to get this wrong because he'll come for me and he has guns.
I think I just saw him peeking through the wooden window.
I think he's there. The first thing he said was that that he and his team of hackers could decrypt the iPhone in 3 weeks, or he would eat a shoe on Neil Cavuto's program because it was such an easy thing to do, and he would get his team of social engineers, and they would socially engineer the password out of the dead people, and, you know, there was this whole thing.
Seance.
Right, and then he sort of said after that that the social engineering part was obviously a joke, but he maintains that, like, all he would have to do, all he and his team of hackers would have to do, is have access to the equipment that he says he knows the FBI has, to decap the chip, to take
some acid and more or less boil away the dissolve away the top parts of the chip to where you can get an electron microscope and go look at the state of each of those relays and be able to reconstruct what that password hash password
is. And this is the chip we're talking about is the ASICs. System on a chip processor from the iPhone in question.
Now, speaking just to roll back a couple of years, at DEF CON, there have been talks on doing this. It's possible, but they've all been like 555 timer chips. They've all been very simple chips. So you can do that. What he's talking about is it's the same technique, same theory, but it's much more precise. You need some high dollar equipment.
Right.
Like millions of dollars of equipment, if not.
Yeah, and so McAfee says, and this whole thing, and then there was another. the story gets very convoluted. The whole
As
point
does
is
everything with McAfee.
We Ars Technica. We talked to him. We got a great piece out of it. He was very candid on the phone. He's was a fun character to talk to. And I'm hoping to at some point here try to get him as a guest on Technology Bites here.
He said he would like to be on the air.
He said he would like to. We're working with his campaign manager, and we're going to try to get it sorted at some point in the next couple of weeks to get him on. He'll be a fascinating fellow to talk to. But so the reason why, wrapping back around here.
You heard it here first.
This is why I wasn't here last week.
McAfee on the air, maybe.
This whole thing went like really long, and it was like an all day long monster crazy thing.
Back and forth, though, right?
There was a lot of back
and forth. Can you divulge any more of the colorful parts
he said the F word a lot. So there's a lot of that.
And we want him on this show.
Yes!
Well, there was some discussion of possibly having him on the air, like having call-in in, but I think it was decided that we didn't have enough
we don't have enough time dump time
in the station to accommodate any kind of a
phone
call.
I'm sure it wouldn't be a problem. He was open because we were on a phone call. He's been on TV interviews before. It's not like he's sort of, you know, unhinged 24/7.
He puts on his suit, so he goes from, you know, having like back tattoos, you know, shirtless, shopping for clothes, you know, to putting on a suit, and he looks just as respectable as, you know.
Yeah, no,
the next guy
and
in the street,
if you, so yes, if anybody wants to get kind of the skinny on this fellow, go pop open a YouTube search and search for John McAfee, how to uninstall McAfee antivirus. And that'll be a great experience.
Now there is, he does have a sense of humor.
That'll teach you some things.
It'll teach you some things. I know that may or may not be a joke, but he's very, and this actually is a great tie-in. So he looks like Flicted. Where was the party? Was that at like the Larry Flint? Yeah, it was at a Larry Flint place was the party where they did. So, you know, people got passes. You could get in the list, go to the thing. So
I would almost want to go to DEF CON just to hang out with John McAfee.
So, yes, in this video, it was very much that. There are – it's a little bit, I don't know, misogynistic.
It's not a safe for work.
I assume
video.
That they're fake bath salts.
Watch
I assume that
home.
They're real guns. And I think it's a real $100 bill that he's lighting cigars with, but it's that style of video. So it's not something you huddle around the kids and the grandparents to come watch, you know, the nice Mr. Libertarian president.
Now, okay, so all this being said, I think we should emphasize that, you know, he's a public figure. He's got crazy outspoken viewpoints, but he also is.
Well, crazy, depending on your point of view.
But, yeah, but he also is a very skilled security researcher. He does...
Very well respected in the community.
Very well respected. He does know what he's talking about. He's not just out there just being crazy. So, yes, we are hoping to get him on the show. This maybe sometime in the next couple of weeks. Don't you know, hold me to it, but we're going to give it a shot and see if we can get him. Be a great guest and a great person to talk about sort of the current InfoSec landscape and get his perspective on some of the more detailed stuff that's going on.
I'm sure he's got, if nothing else, I wonder if he's got any war stories from being asked to do things back in the day by certain three-letter agencies before he stepped down or sold.
I'd love to hear him.
But that's the main thing. It's kind of odd that there's so much encryption and so much, you know, of this kind of stuff in the news, and that the average person on the street is now now familiar with a lot of these terms and concepts.
Oh, yeah.
When, you know, 2 years ago, no one really knew, but all these issues that everyone's hearing about now, these aren't new. These are the issues that have been raging on for 10 and 15 years. It's just that everyone's kind of talking about them. And the mainstream news media is kind of picking up on it now, too. So
yeah.
I'm sure that, you know, it's not like all this just popped up 2 years ago. I'm sure that this was going on in his day, and he's probably got some cool, I would hope to say, anecdotal stuff he can talk about.
I hope so. We'll give it a shot and see. Like I said, no promises, but he's expressed interest, and we'll see if we can make it happen.
If that does happen, we will let everybody know on the Facebooks, on the IRCs, everywhere. Jay will probably put up like a lawn poster. We'll get this out there. You will know.
Yeah, and in the interest of balance, just for those of you listening out there, so he's the Libertarian candidate. We did send an email to the front runners for both parties, Donald Trump. We sent it to hugetrump@AOL.com, but we're not sure that he has a computer, so we don't think he got it. And then we also emailed Hillary Clinton, but we think that might be on her mail server that got confiscated by the FBI. So we're working on it.
Let me log into her mail server and check. Hang on. No, it's got an email forward. It's got
McAfee
an email forward.
Can log into her mail server.
Close down port 25.
Wasn't it running? Wasn't it server 2003 with Exchange 2003, or was it 2008?
Afflicted is the mail.
I thought it was
expert.
2003. I thought I remember reading she was running. Well, she the IT person and the IT consulting company that she had paid to set up her mail server for her. I thought it was using server 2003 and Exchange 2003.
Yeah, the only way the story would have been better is if she had hired the Geek Squad from Best Buy to send up her.
Now, I haven't seen this. They did this a lot, I think, in 2008. But I wouldn't mind seeing like a workup of all the presidential profiles of their hosting services, their
net
block owners.
Well, I can tell you, for a long time, a long, long time, the White House used Lotus Notes for its email system.
Yeah.
Up in Lotus and Domino Server for the back end. Up until at least Obama's first term, they were on Domino Server and Lotus Notes. And it was always weird to see that, because occasionally you would catch glimpses. They would, like, emails from the White House would get printed in places, and it would be like, I know, like, look at how broken that header is. That's a Lotus Notes quote. That's, like, exactly what Lotus Notes look like.
I'm just saying that people should know if your campaign platform is pushed from Nginx or Microsoft IIS or Apache or, you know.
I wonder what WhiteHouse.gov is.
I would think I've seen that some of them were going over
to
Nginx.
That. I'm sure that one should be pretty heavy duty. I know that the Lotus Notes thing, though, I know that the Bush administration, there had been a mail system they were supposed to go to, and they ditched it, like, at the last second. And so it was a whole kind of ad hoc deal, if I remember the news stories correctly. They didn't go with whatever their brand new fancy thing was, because it apparently had a little too much accountability in what you could capture and see and all that kind of fun stuff.
Now, I do know that Lotus Notes came out of a lot of the era when you had a lot of LAN software that wasn't necessarily connected to email. So Lotus Notes was a secure, it was not secure, but secure by not being connected to the internet, internal messaging system. So I can see why that, if they wanted secure messaging, could still be a carryover in the White House, because you just don't want to go and, you know, like, WhiteHouse.gov hosted by Hotmail or hosted
no,
by Gmail.
So WhiteHouse.gov apparently uses Akamai for their as their CDN and also their IPv6 compliant.
Whoa!
Fascinating.
Go White House.
Yeah, I'm just running them through the Qualys,
sure that,
the SSL.
You did WhiteHouse.gov, right?
Yes, WhiteHouse. I did WhiteHouse.gov, not the other one. I'm just running it. I just plugged WhiteHouse.gov into the SSL Labs online test, which will knock back, in addition to server info, a bunch
so
of
So more of this,
cool stuff.
We don't really know what's behind there, but what that tells us is that they're using Cloudflare,
they're
Akamai.
Right.
They're doing it right.
They're doing it right.
They've got someone else, a very large presence that controls a lot, not controls, but has presence over most of the backbones, hits most of the parts of the internet. They're hosting the, more or less, the site. So if you were to do a distributed denial of service attack on the White House, you'd have to hit a lot.
WhiteHouse.gov is
a
on
plus
the,
overall
the
rating.
They're on the HSTS list, the HTTP Strict Transport Security list. That's
wow.
That's very, very nice. They are using HTTP server signature is Akamai Ghost, so they're using Akamai's like customized like CDN stuff.
Nicely done. Content delivery network.
They're doing it. They're doing
this just
correct.
In. There's a report that there's some kind of cyber attack going on against White House.
What? What? Let me close this window real quick.
Scanning.
Well, I mean, really,
Akamai is reporting that someone has been gathering critical information about
you.
Yeah. I accidentally held down the F5 key. That's my bad.
You would not expect anything else. It's they're doing it right. They do still support TLS 1.0, so that's, I guess, kind of bad, but whatever. Okay, that was a
So I would assume nice Hillary's camp there. Is running. These are just guesses. Hillary's camp is running OpenBSD. Sanders is probably running
No, Sanders is running.
I could see him being Plan 9.
No,
something
it's,
very esoteric.
It's like Slackware or something.
You think Slackware? I can see Slackware. Like maybe custom rolled Linux from scratch. Because he's got a lot of young 18 to 21-year-olds just like spend all day compiling and moving debugging symbols. Reels is out there. I'm assuming...
Trump is using Office 365.
Trump has been writing stuff on the back of AOL CDs.
No, I bet he's got a tablet. He's got something. Yeah.
They've got to be using Hosted Exchange.
We know he's using an iPhone for his tweets.
Well,
again, because he said he was boycotting it, and now they showed back up. His assistant or whoever's tweeting.
Yeah, there was... I think it was... May have been... Gizmodo. It was either Gizmodo or BuzzFeed. And I think it was Gizmodo. They tried to dig up, right after Trump said that we should boycott Apple and no iPhone thing, and his staffers started tweeting with iPhones. I think it was Gizmodo tried to dig up any and all pictures of Trump within the past 4 or 5 year span of him using technology to try to see what he's got. And it turns out that most of them are posed press shots, but even candid shots of Trump in his office and on his plane, show him basically not he doesn't really in one picture he had a MacBook Pro that was closed on the desk behind him.
But that could have been whoever.
Yeah, but other
than
that,
does it show him with pen and legal pad, or does it show him doing any kind
desk
of
desk with blotter and papers and stuff? He doesn't. He's not really the kind of guy, I think. And Trump? He's in his mid sixties.
Yeah,
he's more of
a guy to talk and give orders.
At this point, he's well into the "I've got people who do that for me" phase when it comes to anything, any kind of email. Or it would not surprise me if he's one of those folks who has an assistant print out web pages for him and highlight relevant passages
for the day. Give him the days.
Wouldn't surprise me, honestly.
Okay, so he runs Office 365. Who else is out there in the field?
365.
Who is still left?
Carson. What would Carson use?
He seems like a new. He seems like a new Windows guy to
Carson,
me.
Carson.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Definitely. Yeah.
That's
tough. Yeah. Whatever.
Yahoo.
Yeah. Yes, Carson's still rocking the Yahoo mail address.
Maybe he's the OpenBSD guy.
Ted Cruz has got a MySpace page to. To reach out to all the kids.
Oh no, this wasn't this. I didn't mean to be all derogatory with this. I was just
send your feedback to Cruise Rocks for the youth at AOL.com.
They have a lot of free hours left. Let's not pick on some free hours.
What about Stein?
Who?
Stein.
Ah, Sousa.
Sousa Linux.
Yes. Da.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
All right, well, I was going to say we'd go to the news, but I think we probably need to fill the next, 8 minutes or so, because I would guess that at some point soon it's going to,
You're going to cut out. You will cut out in 2.5 minutes, Pete, 2.5 to 3 minutes. Although we did start the show late, so it could be 4.5 to 5 minutes.
When the dump Pete cron job runs.
Yeah, well, whatever it is, I don't know what's so important. It's at 8:30 or on Wednesday nights, but something goes. With the half hour thing, it may be tied. It may be something tied to the uploads to the. I wonder if it may be the upload of the prior show to the server to the archive.
Somebody's DVR in their show they like to watch from here.
Something's gone. I know it always happens right about the same time Flicted unplugs the cable to go up and get a drink. And then you drop, and then he comes back, and then it's you come on. And I there's got to be
something, or just by him being there. It must be from Flicted not being there. That
always puts his cup down on the hang up on Pete button.
It's that Ethernet cable he's got to get out from under, I think, is what it is.
3 minute dump button.
Mm-hmm. Goodbye, Pete button.
When he picks up that mini that all this routes through to the station and takes it with him to get a Coke.
So here's the question I had that we kind of got around to. So what is actually going on, and what kind of teeth does the possible order to hand over your source code? And this sounds like to me, it's two things that sounded to me like, I just kind of heard very peripherally what was going on. But it sounded like to me that the government was saying, hey, Apple, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. if you're not going to do this, just give us your source code and we'll do it for you. And really, the source code, that's kind of the keys to the castle. That's everything.
Yes and no.
Kind of. So give me, that's what I'm saying. Yes, I need some clarification.
So first off, this is all going to come out, I think, on the 22nd. That's when the actual hearing is. So right now, everybody's just filing briefs and responses.
And that's a hearing in front of what kind of court? Because I'm assuming it's going to be federal.
I'm going to say it wrong.
Possibly.
If I say it, let's see.
Spell it.
Apple, no. March 22 hearing.
Grand.
District. Apple, Grand. FBI to head to court, March 22nd. It's going to be a before a magistrate judge.
Okay.
In Riverside,
okay,
California.
Single
in Jamaica,
judge in California.
No.
The government, people's court.
The government the FBI has basically said, yeah, kind of exactly what you said. We do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way.
It's a little intimidation.
Well, here's the issue. There's lots of issues with it, but one of the primary issues is the the iOS source code in and of itself. Even if they can compile it. Is not going to help them. What they have to have along with that in order to create their customized version of iOS, the government would need Apple's private signing key. Mm-hmm. They would have to have Apple's private signing key.
And that's what they're after. Yeah.
And that is the big deal.
So at that point, here's the deal. At that point with that signing key, let's just say I had the signing key. Let's just say like I was safeguarded with the signing key.
Do we need to do a review of PKI?
Well, not necessarily, but here's the thing. There's a way to sign code and say, like, hey, this code is what this code should be, to where a piece of hardware that's looking for a particular signature, a particular something, can say, hey, this is cool to run, and it comes from Apple. So Apple, it's just like this. It's like a paper signature. Think that Apple has this paper signature that only Apple knows how to do, and no one really knows what it looks like, but the iPhone somehow is a way to say, like, ah, that is Steve's old signature. We're good. So they're asking...
Your iPhone, by the way, will not... It'll run apps and stuff, but as far as system level tools, will not execute anything that does not have Apple's
you
private code key on
it. You can't get below a certain point inside the hardware, and that's where they need to get. They need to get at a very low level to be able to get to the passcode, to be able to get to the encryption layer.
Or to do
layer.
The bypass of the whatever.
The here's what they're trying to do. If they get enough wrong passwords on the iPhone that they got, they actually get locked out. And Apple's hardware, this is kind of cool.
It didn't just get locked out. It wipes.
It wipes to a certain point, a lot like the iron key stuff, to where, you know, that's the main thing is if you lose your phone and someone gets it and they try to, they can't brute force it over 3 or 4 months. You don't have these factories of, you know, Arduino-powered cell phone unlockers going to try and unlock all these phones. You do it a few times and all the data is gone.
Yep.
The main thing is, you know, you've got your phone banking, you've got all kinds of stuff on your phone these days, so that's not a good thing. So what they want to do is they want a custom firmware kit to let them come into the phone and disable the wiping if after like 8 tries or after 10 tries. They can just brute force it. Yes, they can just brute, and they probably already used maybe 1 or 2. Maybe not.
An important distinction here. The FBI
and that's
is
still
not,
kind of gray area.
It's a gray area. The FBI is not in this case asking Apple to decrypt the phone. What they're asking is for Apple to bypass the 10 wrong codes and the phone wipes itself restriction so that the FBI can then brute force the phone.
Which means they just try every combination until they get one that's right.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's kind of like the amount of effort that Apple would have to put in here is sort of kind of the same, because what Apple would have to create if they complied with the order is a modified version of iOS.
They'd have to then upload it to the phone, either over the air specially, or I'm assuming through like some kind of a cable setup. But it gets really dicey, and you've got one shot at it. And they were saying, like, hey, even if we did this, it'd be 10 people, 3 weeks, ballpark in there.
It didn't seem
outrageous. It's kind of a moot point. It's not the idea of the manpower. It's just the idea of what this actually does. So again, if they did that, the key is out there. There's one master key to everything. And with that, the government could then very easily put software on your phone and say it's from Apple and you would never know. I could do the same thing.
There would be a way if
it's
Apple
not trivial
is, if
that
Apple
you could
is
do
compelled
it with the key.
To turn over its private key, there would be a way for Apple to revoke that private key and reissue one, but it is not easy, and it's not a one-time like instant fix on all anyway.
And a certain percentage of the phones out there would never be updated, I don't think. So there would always be a percentage of phones that are always compromisable, and
it's not
a really big deal. It's a big deal to revoke a key and reissue a key.
But that, especially at that scale.
And at that point, you've also broken the level of trust, because there's been a break in there. So what's not to say that, you know, the original quote unquote, you know, non-Apple version of the Apple software doesn't say, sure, we're doing a new update with the key and just throw the new key away. You know, once you're at that level, you've got a lot more control over the phone. So that's the scary part. It's like, you know, even if you completely trust the government, the key could still be stolen. You know, someone, the sneezing bandit, come in, distract you. Like, who did someone sneeze? And then boom, the key's gone. There are multiple things that could happen here.
So let me restate this too, because this is an important point.
Where'd my keys go?
Yeah, this is an important point. The in some ways, both sides here, if you take their arguments at face value, are exaggerating. The FBI, as they are wont to do, is exaggerating in this particular case about the impact of the data, because this is for the San Bernardino shooter. Like, they've already torn his house apart. They've torn his private life apart. And even the FBI has admitted at this point that in this particular case,
what else can they get?
The phone almost certainly contains no additional useful material information about the case. I mean, you know, maybe it's got the dude's baby pictures on it or whatever, but it doesn't have, it almost certainly, of course we can't say for sure, but it almost certainly doesn't have any additional material.
We could maybe tell that he went to Cinnabon 2 days before, and that's about all we'd be able to tell. Like, so maybe some geolocational data and some last little text there and back.
On the other side of the account, Apple is saying essentially that if they are compelled to create a custom version of iOS without the passcode restriction, that Once they open that door, even if they
release the Kraken,
even if they give this to the government and it's used one time, and then everybody throws, you know, the CDs with the source code on it that, for this particular version,
some higher up, either a senator or maybe even I hate to say it was the director of the CIA, but they were like, they can just burn the copy, like, you know, throwing it into a fireplace, but it's not that easy.
To a certain extent, that also, like, the whole deal, like, once we do this, the door's open, is also a little overblown. Both sides are kind of taking an extremist approach. That being said,
hold on, Apple's putting spin on something?
Yeah, right, I know, right? That being said, both sides also have some merit in what they're saying. You know, as a privacy-minded citizen, I'm on the side of, like, me personally, I'm on the side of Apple, because I don't want additional government intrusion into the cryptography that I use in my day-to-day life to, you know, hide stuff that I don't use that much cryptography. I have very few encrypted emails that I send, and those are usually like, hey, is this encryption working? Can you tell?
My brony dudes are too already again?
Yeah.
With
as complicated as PGP is, every PGP email I send is basically, is my PGP key working? Can you please tell me?
But this sets a precedent.
It does, yeah.
That is somewhat alarmist, because that's not what they're asking. But it creates the opportunity to set a precedent so the government can do it again.
Hey, you did it for them. This is a lot worse than that. Why can't you do it now?
So even if they say, we're going to destroy everything, and they do destroy everything, well, you did it for us before, and this is the same sort of situation.
And the
because legal systems really love precedents.
So here's the other funky thing too on this is that Tim Cook is being accused. Tim Cook, as the head of Apple, is being accused, and Apple is being accused in general of
a lot of nasty
of
things.
Purposefully ramping up the encryption complexity on their devices. Like, basically, they're taking fire from a lot of quarters for using this as an opportunity, this FBI, this particular incident, as an opportunity to create encryption methodologies for their phones and other devices that are, in fact, so complicated that they absolutely cannot be bypassed under any circumstances.
There are lots of services out there, third-party applications, that already do exactly that.
Well, here's the deal. Apple, though, is being accused of doing it specifically in response to this, and Tim Cook has denied that.
I think that's where things were going anyway.
Well, I kind of do, too. But that brings us, I mean, Pete, I see it on the list here. You're going to get into it at some point. There is, in fact, an Apple News event coming up. When is this?
On the 21st.
Next Monday. That supposedly they're going to talk about new phones and stuff. I'll let you do it, Pete.
But yeah, we've passed the witching hour. I think we still have Pete online.
Oh yeah, should we do?
You guys did not fall off, so really? I'm wondering if the
maybe it's all Jay's fault.
Well, it's daylight savings happened, and so maybe whatever. If it's a job and they didn't change the time on.
I doubt. I bet though.
Did you just go?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, did we start about 5 minutes later than we usually do? Ballpark. Yep.
She dropped out, Pete.
Maybe it's a buffering issue, like a buffer fills up or something.
Yeah, you dropped off for a little bit. And you're a little bit weak sauce right now with the connection coming through.
8:38 this time.
But maybe enough, later. Yeah, maybe enough bits have to build up to where it bites.
It has to wait till I'm actually trying to say something before it starts jacking with us.
We taunted it, is what we did.
Well, now that we've had this huge rabbit hole on encryption, should we do the news? Is it?
I
news
like
time?
The news. Can who can Flicted do Jay? I'm not going to do Jay.
well, and now push the button, Flicted.
Push the button. That's a bad Jay.
What
I'm
was
sorry.
That?
Oh wow.
That's how Jay sounds in my head.
It was like Jay has a parrot or something.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yeah, I think maybe we're getting a little bleed through from an auto-playing video. But, okay, yeah, we've got a number of different stories tonight. This one, you know, a lot of people go to the New York Times or the BBC and other critical places to find out news about how dangerous a world we live in. And apparently on Sunday and Monday, the Times, the BBC, AOL, and a host of other major news and entertainment websites inadvertently ran malicious ads that were attempting to hijack people's computers and demand a ransom. This is according to security researchers Malwarebytes and Trend Micro. I found this at CNET. The cyber attackers inserted ads that contained malicious software into legitimate online ad networks, the researchers said. The ad networks then distributed the compromised advertising, known as malvertising, to websites which served them to visitors. The software then locked visitors out of computer files and demanded a ransom for access. Apparently, according to CNET, the Times, BBC, and AOL did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Ransomware hacks scramble computer files with an unbreakable code and won't release them until a ransom is paid, usually by Bitcoin. Computers running Microsoft Windows software have been frequent targets of ransomware. And earlier this week, researchers reported what appeared to be the first ransomware targeting Macs. But this is the common, you know, this is the new kind of thing. The attack on the media sites was delivered through multiple ad networks and targeted security holes in out-of-date versions of Silverlight, Flash, and other software. According to the researchers, it didn't require visitors to the websites to interact with the ads. So it wasn't that you just had to click it. It was just see the ad, have it appear on the page was enough. That's according to Malwarebytes senior security researcher Jerome Segura. And it was aimed at these particular updated programs. So the deal was, if you went by the site and looked at one of the pages with the malware ads, and you had the wrong software, if you had old software, then you'd get burned. So there's a good reason if you need an incentive to update your software. That might be something that might get you thinking, because you're kind of vulnerable to being hijacked or ransomed. And then and our world is even more dangerous when you add Star Wars technology. On Wednesday morning, everyone at Farmingdale State College on Long Island, New York, was reportedly told to stay in a safe place after someone called 911 to say they'd seen a man in a car with a rifle. According to the Associated Press, the caller thought the man was assembling the rifle. But when the police arrived, it wasn't quite the weapon that they had feared. What it was a Star Wars toy. And no, it's not even so. No, so the first thought is, oh, well, maybe it was a blaster toy, so it looks like a gun. Nope, it was a lightsaber. Neither the college nor the campus police immediately replied to requests for comment. They did tweet. The college Twitter account said that the police situation on campus has been resolved without incident. Everyone should resume normal activities. It's unclear who reported the man or who he actually was. Police, though, told Newsday that the man with the lightsaber was a student. So, kids, in Texas, you can bring, open carry your gun to school, but assemble your lightsabers at home. We don't want to scare people. And now this one, I think it's interesting kind of how times have changed, because I haven't heard a lot of griping about this one, but I see the story. Instagram isn't, you know, Facebook, whenever they tweak their algorithms, you can hear the complaining hours before the algorithms actually hit the system. Facebook owned Instagram is tweaking your Instagram feed with an algorithm to better customize it to your browsing habits and interests. This was announced yesterday. For now, the New York Times reports Instagram will only be testing the new format, which will rank posts from your friends and other content that matters to you at the top of your feed, a break from the reverse chronological feed Instagram has offered since its inception. So you can start griping about it if you want, or you can see if it works better for you or what your choice is on that one. Another story, we mentioned this last week and had some question about, you know, playing networked games against people on other platforms. And the general conclusion was that that wasn't happening right now. But Microsoft announced a big new feature for Xbox owners on the 14th, cross-network play. It's something that Software Giant has hinted at for years and now seems the reality of PS4, Xbox One, and PC players playing the same game together might finally happen. Developers building games for Xbox One and Windows 10 will be able to support the feature, but it will require Sony and others to, quote, participate, unquote, in order for games to be played across Xbox One and PlayStation 4. Rocket League will be one of the first titles to support the new cross-network play, and Microsoft notes there is an open invitation to other networks to participate as well, strongly hinting that Sony or other console manufacturers could enable gamers to play their friends regardless of what device they're using. So we're not sure. If developers and console makers get behind Microsoft's support of cross-network play, then it will obviously change the shape of games in the future. Currently, console gamers are restricted to playing titles on the PlayStation Network or Xbox Live, and many pick their platform, you know, their console, based on what their friends purchased. Opening up online multiplayer gaming across different platforms will remove a big restriction in console gaming, but it will also create a conversation around which titles should allow PC gamers to play against consoles, which we talked about last week, because a mouse and keyboard can still have many advantages over a gamepad for first-person shooters. So you may have to figure out a way to, I don't know, you got to wonder, either they need to limit it or label it, or, you know, they may have to introduce some kind of handicapping system so that there's some parity. So we'll keep an eye on that as that opens up. And in the best government you can buy category, in Tennessee, lawmakers have defeated a proposal to expand municipal broadband, with one state representative accusing fellow elected officials of caving to pressure from lobbyists. I found this one on Ars Technica. Quote, "It's a testament to the power of lobbying against this bill and not listening to our electorate," said Representative Kevin Brooks, told reporters this after the votes, according to a Times Free Press article yesterday. The deal, Senator Todd Gardenhire of Chattanooga blamed AT&T for leading efforts to kill the bill. Quote, "We're talking about AT&T, Gardenhire said at the time. Quote, "They're the most powerful lobbying organization in this state by far." AT&T publicly opposed the bill, saying that, quote, "taxpayer money should not be used to overbuild or compete with the private sector." Tennessee House Speaker Beth Harwell has said she prefers, quote, "that the private sector take this over." Comcast has also tried previously to prevent expansion of municipal broadband in Tennessee, suing the Electric Power Board of Chattanooga in 2008 to prevent it from building a fiber network. Comcast lost the suit, and the Electric Power Board built its network. And this has been the most – they're at the center of the efforts to expand municipal broadband in Tennessee. The utility petitioned the FCC to preempt a state law that prevents it from expanding outside its electric service area to adjacent towns that have poor internet service, and the FCC agreed to do so despite opposition from state officials and AT&T, who, let's see, if the adjacent towns have poor internet service and AT&T opposes anybody going in to serve them, I'm just going to take a guess about who the provider is, who is probably charging premium dollars to provide poor internet service. That's just a speculation on my part, but it certainly seems like it follows. Tennessee sued the FCC to preserve its law that limits city-run broadband networks, and that one's going to court tomorrow. Not content to wait for the legal process to play out, apparently they've been pushing legislation that would remove the state level restriction that prevents broadband providing electric utilities from expanding outside their area. But the proposal failed, and even an amendment that would have scaled it back to just a pilot project for the EPB in Chattanooga failed by a 5-3 vote. So, an update, because this is at the end of the article. Comcast told Ars Technica that it did not take a formal position on this bill or other similar ones in Tennessee and does not lobby for their passage or defeat. So it does appear they did not think the bill was a good idea. They said that we have provided information on our investment in broadband and infrastructure in Tennessee and the factual experiences of multiple broadband efforts in communities across the country, many of which have left communities saddled in debt, or like Provo, Utah, where the infrastructure was sold to Google for $1, but the debt remains. So there's that. And it's just interesting to see when somebody, frankly, if you're talking about a market being competitive, it's one thing if the government was doing municipal broadband and then making it illegal for others to compete. I can see the difference between those two, but when the market isn't served and instead of stepping up and actually just friggin' serving their market, they decide that they'll just spend the money on lobbying. They kind of lose me there. I guess there's my editorial comment on this one. And a top story. This one just kind of fascinates me. Researchers at Georgia Tech had 42 volunteers follow an autonomous robot, what they thought was an autonomous robot, into a conference room. So the deal was they were instructed this robot was going to show them where they needed to go. However, the robot was actually guided by a hidden researcher whose goal was to intentionally lead the test subjects astray in order to show that the bot is unreliable. So essentially, in finding to go to the conference room, they made it so that this bot that they were following did not seem to really actually be, you couldn't count on it. And then they do that. And then when the researchers then simulated a building fire, all of the subjects immediately followed the untrustworthy guide robot again, despite the fact that it led them toward the back of the building and away from clearly marked exit signs. The researchers believe that this was due to the fact that the robot was automatically viewed by the volunteers as a, quote, authority figure. So I'll invite the guys to come in on this. I guess, do we put too much faith in our computers when they tell us stuff?
I would have to see the robot. If it looked like a Dalek or a Cyberman, I would go the other way.
Got a little bit of a Dalek look. It was kind of a cylinder type robot.
It looks like it's a quad based robot. It's got some RGB around it. And this is the key thing. The antennas are kind of like geared to where it could park an aircraft or get it to come up to a jet course. It looks like, the two kind of, or two dual, it's also looked like a dual wielding two lightsabers, quite possibly.
Yeah, well, what it tells me is that if you can just get people, if you just can find a way to make people think that the robot has some sort of authority, then you could get people to follow a Roomba around your office building.
Well, here's just for grins. The issue, too, here, it kind of loops back to the same thing, that if we get into the habit of handing over complete control of systems, be it an iPhone or be it an autonomous robot, people do trust the phones, people do trust the robots. I'm not saying it's trivial, but someone came in and said, "Hey, let's hack the robot and have the fire robot run into the burning building." Yeah, that's a concern. So this is why we need completely secure systems. I guess one of the things I wonder,
and I would think they would need to follow, they would need to do more research, because I would really love to see, were the volunteers college students, first of all? How old were they? Because I think one of the things that'll happen is obviously at some point, you have to decide if you're going to think for yourself on this stuff or if you're going to, because I guess, frankly, if the loudest person in the room, or the guy who looked like he had the most status had done the same thing, I think people would have people might have followed.
Well, so we know it's researchers. I would like to see, like you said, the sample sex. If it's a bunch of, you know, like roboticist dudes that are like really like that stuff, I would maybe follow a robot into a burning building just to go check out the robot. I mean, it really kind of depends.
Maybe. Well, with immaterial or with material objects, I mean, you tend to treat them or take the information they give you as a given. Like if there was an exit sign.
What's a machine? It's infallible, right?
Well, it's not necessarily that it was infallible, but it's like it's part of the landscape. If there's an exit sign on a building, you trust that that exit sign is probably going to take you in the right way if you look up.
But the thing is, the article said that they actually, the robot
chose to
passed
follow the robot.
Exit
yeah.
signs and followed the
so
robot.
So it wasn't a blind faith thing. Yeah. It's at any point they could have done a little bit of, you know, looking at signs and looking with the direction the robot was going and said, hey, this is probably not the direction I want to go. I'm
no,
going
but
towards
I, but
the
I see that.
But then they can justify
that.
It in their mind, right? Like, oh, well, the robot probably knows
robot
like,
must
the
know
best
shortcut.
Path.
Somebody set this
maybe
thing up.
It knows where the fire is. It knows the best path or, like, maybe that door on the other side is something, you know, bad or
well, you
or
tend
difficult.
To, I would at least tend to think in like, especially in an environment like that, that, well, nobody could have set this robot up if, like, somebody didn't check what it was supposed to be doing. Like, surely there's a law, like, there's some kind of OSHA thing that says you can't have a robot that leads you into the fire okay. instead of out of the fire.
Did someone bump the heat-seeking switch?
Yeah.
yeah, that looks like that's what happened.
Like, surely there's surely this thing is like somebody set it up right.
The robot's name was Sparky.
Maybe they were hoping that the robot would encounter another robot leading another group and the two would fight.
I think that might have been awesome. Robots following the robot. This is very, very murky story.
Like RoboDucks.
I think the you know, I guess the main thing, you know, obviously they made it intentionally not function correctly. And unfortunately, it means, though, that if there was a defect, if the thing had a problem, then people might just continue to follow the robot, even though it's clearly, you know, damaged.
And the robot has developed a taste for human blood now.
I love Box.
So it's one of those where, of course, now anybody's heard of this experiment. And there's the thing. I think that this is early days, and so that's part of why people, there's a novelty factor.
And the robot think, says, is it getting hot in here? I don't know. I'm a robot.
I will say that's a little, that study's a little bit misleading because as many times as we've sent our robots out to lure in unsuspecting humans, it, like 1 in 10, it very, very rarely works. A lot of it could be that we got it a Murderbot t-shirt, but that... It could be branding. It could be branding.
If people unquestionably followed robots, there'd be a lot more females at DEF CON, I would guess. And a lot more robots.
Well, that's our first hour drawing to a close with talks of murder robots and other things.
And dating robots that can mislead young ladies to be with
what? Computers. Y'all are twisting what we did here. We were just building some Arduino stuff.
Arduino
All
software.
Right, well, that is the first hour. I am Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's Rivas. You've been listening to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Time is now, my friend. Saturday, March 26th at Cottonwood, Houston, the Lone Star Jukebox will celebrate 25 years on Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 FM. Our event kicks off at 5 p.m. and continues through the evening. Hello, my friends. This is Rick Izquierdo, host of the Lone Star Jukebox. Shiny Ribs, our headliner. Oh, yeah, country cool. And Hard Luck Revival, local Houston band, making waves in the scene. Once again, that's Saturday, March 26th, Cottonwood, Houston. Doors open at 5 o'clock. We'll see you there. Be safe.
KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
KPFT transmite por el aire 24 horas del día, 7 días de la semana y cubre diferentes tipos de gente y gente con diferentes estilos de vida. KPFT está aquí cuando usted necesita lo mejor de noticias independientes y música durante el día. Pero manteniendo este tipo de recurso no viene barato. KPFT necesita su contribución para continuar a tener esta estación única cuando usted lo necesite. Si usted está escuchando cuando se prepara por la cama o cuando se está levantando en la mañana para el trabajo, ¿por qué no hablar a la línea de departamentos de miembros a KPFT y hacer un miembro? El número es fácil. Para recordar, es 713-526-4000, extensión 314. O puede visitarnos en nuestra página kpft.org y dar su contribución. Esto es KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. Now it's time.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
And back to you, Flicted. As he dies laughing in
I
the
have
studio.
It on good authority. There is actually no Barrett
there
time
There is no
tonight.
Barrett time tonight, sadly. The whole show.
It was Pi Day recently.
Is
so.
Barrett and Lee time.
Yes,
we have
Pi
dropped
Day.
The ball on some of that. Did my partner in Pi Flicted, did you get Pi down south? Did you observe... Pi Day.
Did you get Pi down
Hey-o.
South like that?
I've only been, yeah, this is a.
Are we working blue
Man.
Now?
We're working apparently. Bob Saget just tweeted.
Revenge of the Nerds here? Or
the
what?
Aristocrats!
Yes.
Buy a pie.
No, so if you were not aware, March 14th, as in 3.14, is Pi, as in an approximation. We won't go into the numbers, but it's math. Although, here's, I do take solace in that. Tau Day, or Ta Day, depending on how you want to say it.
I like Tau.
I like Tau. I like T-A-U, yeah. Which is approximately 2 pi, but it's much more useful in many ways. That's coming up on 6.28, so that, what is that, June 28th.
Nerd.
So that actually, it's 2 pies. It's an excuse to go have 2 pies, versus you can't really have more than a slice without kind of feeling like you're taking advantage of the holiday with Pi Day, so...
And that's a just go time. Ahead and just double fist 2 pies.
Dual wield is what I prefer. Dual wielding of pie. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Do you
that's fair. Or if you can go with it, what a tau is. So a tau is what about a half,
third
of a pie.
Do you get like an attack penalty if you're dual wielding pies?
I assume. We're going to find out. We're not going to let June go by.
Yeah, so I guess this episode will be forever known as the pie fisting episode of Technology Bites.
I hear that's a thing.
So if you're at all interested, there is actually a manifesto. If you know, let's go. We've said a lot of things. It'll probably get us on the watch list on air tonight. Hello.
And that's Barrett time.
That's Barrett time. Go check out TAUDAY, tawday.com. And the tagline here is, no, really, Pi is wrong. And there's a Tau manifesto, and it will try and sell you on why Tau is better than Pi. So it's at least if you're a geek, you should know both. You know both sides of the argument here. Although it's really the same geeky side.
Didn't Pi come up in a recent episode of Better Call Saul? If
Ooh,
you guys are watching.
I don't know. Jay's not
wrong.
Here to answer that.
Oh, because I watch it, and I believe it did.
Spoilers.
All right, never mind. I will not speak any further about whether or not Pi's feature into an episode of Better Call Saul.
Season 2 of Daredevil's releasing in a few days, though.
Yeah! I'm kind of excited. I think it's
Elektra
Friday.
And Punisher.
Yeah.
I'm more excited about the Punisher stuff than the Elektra
stuff.
It's
the 18th.
Yeah. That's Friday.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah, it is. And you can just watch it all at once if you're a Netflix kind of person.
And then go rush out and tell everybody about what you saw.
That's right. It's the American way.
All right, well, so that's Bear Time, and now it's time for...
Bite.
Still funny.
Underpants gnomes.
Every time. So, as mentioned or alluded to earlier, Apple has sent out the invitations for a press event on March 21st, as expected. The invitation provides few hints about what is coming, but it does use the standard iPhone, iPad, Apple Watch, and MacBook Finish colors.
And they were sent specifically to all members of the FBI.
the colors on the ad were space gray, silver, gold, and rose gold. Hmm. And the headline is, "Let us loop you in."
And it's a lot of circles and loops. So is there something we should be looking at?
Yes.
Do you think they're going to have like wearable smart earrings?
The new iPhone is round.
Right. Oh.
Well, I heard there were two versions of this they were going to send out, and the one that they almost sent out but didn't send to the FBI was something like, "We're number one," and it had a hand with one finger up or something. But then I think
say
that got
no
mixed.
More.
They thought that would work. The company is expected to make a handful of small announcements. One is a new 4-inch iPhone, which to date has been called the iPhone 5 SE or simply iPhone SE in rumors. It's expected to have specs similar to the iPhone 6S without 3D touch and to replace the iPhone 5S in the iPhone lineup. Second expected announcement is a new 9.7-inch iPad with updated internals and some features from the iPad Pro, including the smart connector and Apple Pencil support. The iPad Air 2 was introduced in October of 2014, and this is the longest Apple's gone without updating that one, so since they had the first model in 2010. It's also expected to usher in some minor hardware and software updates, including some new Apple Watch band options. iOS 9.3, they think, will come out. WatchOS 2.2, OS 10, 11.4. And tvOS 9.2. It's like, wow, these are all so easy to remember, aren't they? Basically, you know, the smart thing is if you've got a watch, an iPad, a Mac, or any of those things, if an update comes, then probably you should just go ahead and install it. The timing is about right to introduce some Skylake-based MacBooks and MacBook Pros too, but there have not been any rumors about specific Mac refreshes. Doesn't mean it won't happen. It just means it's less likely to happen, or it may be that the refresh isn't a big enough deal, so they'll just, you know, like one day they'll show up on the Apple Store, which I would, you know, they're overdue. The Skylake based MacBooks and MacBook Pros are really, you know, the processors are, they're starting to get a little behind a lot of other companies right now.
I checked the upgrade path, and more or less the site says that if you have to check, it's already obsolete across the board for all hardware. That's a joke. Now they do say with the whole "let us loop you in," they also make a big deal of giving out the street address where the whole thing's going on, which of course is one infinite loop. So I wonder if it's not like it's maybe just like kind of something lame and it's just like, hey, let's put all the information into one. Everyone's kind of trying to like center around and have like an information ecosystem. So I'm wondering if it's not something like that.
Are they actually doing it on the campus? I guess
they are. Yeah, main campus. So
that's they've done that. It's not unusual, but it's also not usual. Usually they rent out Moscone or something big if they're going to do a big announcement like this. The campus announcements are usually a little smaller.
Yeah, maybe they can't afford to rent out the conference.
Maybe. We're cutting back.
Could be. Or they want, I don't know, maybe the loop thing, maybe that is just an allusion to their address. Or maybe it means that the whole thing, they're going to have the people follow a robot and see how long they keep following it.
Or they show up and the keynote infinitely begins with, "This isn't
around a loop." So there was good Apple news. Here's some bad Apple news. A new iOS Trojan has been found in the wild. And the interesting part about this one is it's able to infect non-jailbroken iOS devices through PCs without the need to exploit an enterprise certificate. Named Ace Deceiver, the malware was discovered by Palo Alto Networks and is currently affecting iOS users in China. Basically, it infects an iOS device by taking advantage of flaws in FairPlay, Apple's digital rights management system. Oh, way to go.
Sounds a lot like Android, doesn't it?
Sounds like it's not managing the rights particularly well. According to Palo Alto Networks, it uses a technique called FairPlay Man in the Middle, which has been used to spread pirated iOS apps in the past by using fake iTunes software and spoofed authorization codes to get the apps on iOS devices. Same technique is now being used to spread the Ace Deceiver malware. So from July of 2015 to February of 2016, three Ace Deceiver iOS apps were uploaded to the official iOS App Store, posing as wallpaper apps and providing attackers with a fake authorization code to use in the Ace Deceiver attacks. A Windows iPhone management app called AISI Helper, the claim to provide services like system backup and cleaning, was installed by users in China, and it went on to install malicious iOS apps on connected devices. These apps were designed to be third-party app stores with free content to bait users into using them and submitting their Apple IDs and passwords. The Apple ID information was then uploaded to the App Deceiver server. So Apple removed the original Ace Deceiver iOS apps from the App Store in February. But the attack remains active because the attackers still have the authorization codes necessary to install fake apps on iOS devices. This right now is only in China, but it could spread to additional regions in the future. Ace Deceiver is especially insidious as it has not been patched and could work on older versions of iOS even when patched. It installs apps automatically from an infected computer and does not require an enterprise certificate. So just feel comfortable when you hook your stuff up. Now, if you keep your system clean, and you're not installing, I would say be wary of free stuff that doesn't look legit or that looks too good to be true.
My Jay Lee soundboard won't uninstall.
In its current incarnation, it requires users to download the AISI Helper Windows app to your computer before the malware can spread to the devices. So if you've downloaded that software, remove it immediately and change your Apple ID passwords. So you can go to Palo Alto Networks' website if you want to read more stuff about the malware. I'm sure everybody who wants to create malware for iOS has rushed out to read it already. Now we get to rumors. You know, these aren't rumors about the current deal that happens on the 21st. These are rumors about iPhone 7. This one actually is kind of cool. It sounds like a good one. It has been speculated that Apple could sell an iPhone 7 Plus, that would be the big one, the giant screen one, with 256 gigs of storage in it.
That's a lot of gigs.
Yep, it's a NAND flash memory chip that comes from SanDisk. The Italian website HD Blog has shared pictures of a SanDisk 256 gig NAND flash memory chip that could fit. Apple's used SanDisk flash memory chips in a number of previous iPhone models, including the iPhone 5, 6, and 6 Plus, while other models have used chips from Samsung, SK Hynix, and Toshiba. More importantly, SanDisk has reduced the size of its 256 gig chip to be smaller than its 64 gig model. So that's odd. It remains unclear if the iPhone 7 Plus will still start at 16 gigs for base storage, which has been getting, anybody who's got a phone with 16 gigs may have noticed it's a little crowded on there. You put a few apps and take some pictures, and it fills up pretty quick. Other rumored iPhone 7 series changes include a faster A10 chip, smart connector, dual lens camera, that's a cool rumor, stereo speakers, an Intel 7360 LTE modem, no headphone jack, waterproofing, wireless charging, which we'll come back to in a second, relocated antenna bands, and more. There's rumors that the iPhone 7 Plus models could have 3 gigs of RAM. Look, it's fascinating how quickly the specs of iPhones, especially the big iPhones, are moving towards being like similar to like MacBook Airs. You know, as far as like capacities and amount of RAM and so on. Because MacBook Air, I think maxes out at 4 gigs of RAM, unless they changed that recently. And I mentioned wireless charging. We're not just talking about the kind of set it down on the special pad thing. There's apparently evidence that Apple is looking towards a wireless charging feature for its upcoming iPhone models. But it's designed to allow its devices to siphon power from, quote, further away from the charging mats used with current smartphones. Morgan Stanley analyst note from February says the same thing. It expects wireless charging to be added to the iPhone in the next year or two based on industry experts. Apple's filed a patent which may describe its wireless charging goals. Let's see. The steps towards what Apple's done so far, the signs point to one partner called Energys, a publicly traded company that's firmly in its R&D phase at the moment. It's come up with a system called What Up? That enables smartphones and other small gadgets to charge from as far as 15 feet away from a wireless transmitter. The thing I wonder about, I mean, that is interesting and cool. The thing I wonder about is how would, with those kinds of transmitters like that, would you get into issues of battery cycles where, because it would be, if you had, say, the chargers in your, at your desk, and as long as you're within 15 feet of your desk, your phone is charging. Would that screw up your battery? Or
that sounds like something that would give you cancer.
It's getting warm in here, is what I'm thinking. I know they're doing a lot of like directed energy, and I don't know what patents are underlying this, but everything from, and I don't know if it's Cisco, but some people looking into being able to have speakers that broadcast directionally and aim it directly at your ears. So like, say like you're on a phone or manning a tech desk or something like that, instead of wearing a headset or having earphones, it actually broadcasts it directly to you to where you're the only person that can actually hear it. And it does some head tracking. You can move. It follows where you go. So I would assume that they're not just going to irradiate the air and do like, kind of what Tesla proposed. I would assume that it'd have to be like a directional channeled beam of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd have to track the iPhone. It would have to be kind of a base stationing kind of thing that did it. It'd be a little bit more, I think, complicated than a charging pad. But it'd have to be directed, I would think.
So
if something gets in the middle of it, I would assume it would turn off rather than, warm up the...
I get a vision of somebody walking into their office. It's late in the day and they had to run back to their office for something, and as they walk around the office, different light bulbs around them go on as the charging system tries to find the phone.
Are they glow once they get back
the
home?
The phone rings, and then stops, and then the computer comes on and goes off.
The bag of microwave popcorn on their desk explodes.
I'm assuming it's going to be non-ionizing radiation, but this radiation will still make you feel warm. It's how, more or less, how the microwave was discovered. It was some radio engineers that were standing a little bit too close to an emitter that noticed the candy bar in their pocket went a little bit more melty than usual. So same thing.
Well, the What Up product from Energys sends focused signals on the same frequency as Wi-Fi.
Mm, okay, there you go. Yeah.
A chip connected to a small device captures those signals and converts them into power. Apparently, it's safe, which is important.
I love how you said that. Apparently, it's safe.
I like how can't see air quotes on the radio.
Apparently, they say it's safe, which is important as it and its partner companies are attempting to secure FCC approval. So I would hope that the FCC is going to do their job on, I would think they would do their job correctly on this and make sure. According to the company, its wireless charging system is about 70% efficient already and still improving. So there's that.
That'll be interesting as far as the access points go, because every more and more things are going to Wi-Fi. There's about to be like another whole new revolution of low power Wi-Fi devices, because right now it takes a lot of power. If you ever turned on your phone and done anything over Wi-Fi, you can almost see the battery drop. So there's going to be another wave of that, but everything is getting very crowded. And if they're kind of piggybacking on the same frequency that Wi-Fi is already on, which is like an industrial, scientific, and medical band. We'll see. Before you had to worry about like, hey, the microwave's going. That's why my Wi-Fi connection drops. Now it could be when Pete drops, someone's charging their phone. We'll see.
There you go. Well, I know that the low-power Wi-Fi, I believe that was a couple weeks ago, we had a story about one that uses like radically less Wi-Fi power than previously. Because essentially I think that now I'm trying to remember what the details were, but it was something like where it turns itself off and does some other things to preserve battery life when it's not actually trying to send or receive data.
Yeah, a lot of the 802 wireless spec was never ever designed thinking that we would have mobile devices. It was always assuming that you would have more or less unlimited power, you know, that you could pump, you know, whatever you wanted to through the radio. Still kind of like old ham thinking, maybe is where it was.
I like ham.
Yeah, I like ham.
Especially when it's heated up by your phone charger.
That's right.
Just put it in between the phone and the charger is what you do. Give it 45 minutes on fast charge, and it's ready to go.
So one thing I don't see in your Apple list, Pete, it's something I can talk about after having spent the last couple of weeks dealing with it a little bit, is I don't see anything here about Apple's plans or Apple's lack of plans in the VR area.
Everyone else is doing it.
And everybody else is,
why
in
aren't
fact,
you, Apple?
Yeah, everybody else is doing it. Have you, I mean, so Steve Jobs, oh boy, I'm losing it now.
Wow.
Palmer Luckey, who is the CEO of Oculus, one of the companies that is in fact in the process of releasing VR headsets that actually work this time around, not like the Lawnmower Man stuff back.
Although
in the
90s. Palmer Luckey sounds like a character name in a VR game.
He kind of looks like a character in the VR game too, honestly. So Palmer Luckey said last week, possibly the week before, he was asked why. So Palmer's company, Oculus, was bought by Facebook a couple of years ago. They are about to release the Oculus Rift, which is a VR headset. It costs a lot. It's a relatively expensive piece of kit.
It's kind of the second rev of this, correct?
The third public rev.
They've done some stuff that's been only mainly to the developer community, yeah. And this one's coming straight to the public.
This
though.
One will be available on the 28th, I think. Anyway, it's coming out for early on in their development efforts. They focused on cross-platform, but the release version will be Windows only. And so one of the members of the press asked Palmer Luckey at a press conference a couple of weeks ago, hey, man, you know, why are you paying such attention to Windows? Why aren't you making your headset and your API and your SDK and your runtime for the headset? Why aren't you making this available on macOS too? And Luckey said actually something very inflammatory. He said basically that he and his company would focus on releasing a VR headset for the Mac once Apple produced a computer that was worth a crap.
What?
That's what he said. So looking into this, looking at what the system specs are for entry level VR, it actually makes quite a bit of sense because for the Oculus Rift, and there's another headset.
Is it just Cray XMP? No, you need a new Cray.
Those aren't that fast anymore.
Okay.
So there's the Oculus Rift, and there's also the Steam VR headset, the HTC Vive. And
Acer has something too. There's a few players, but I guess
those are the two ones that matter at this point. Wait a couple of months and see how the landscape comes out. Right now what matters is the Oculus Rift and the HTC Vive. Both of them require basically I mean they have various minimum specs. They have but what you need is a heavy duty gaming PC with a GeForce 970 or a 980 or really a 980 Ti to work. And these are expensive video cards. These are $400-$600 video cards on top of your, you know, $700-$900 worth of PC you've got to buy.
And Penny Arcade recommends maybe about $20 in tarps.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just saying.
So the and when you look at the comparable graphics cards that are in the spread of Macs that are currently available, even the Mac Pro,
they've always been weak sauce.
Nothing
up until very
there.
Recently. Very recently did they only get discrete video processors, discrete GPUs.
That matter, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I know my iMac that I've got at home, I had the top built-to-order option from whenever I got it a couple of years ago. It's a 780MX, a GeForce 780MX, not even close to minimum spec.
What was your frame rate on Breakout?
the little puzzle game with the space in it goes so fast, though. Even if you've got, you know, one of those $12,000 Mac Pro trash cans with the dual fire GL video cards in it, you're not even close to VR minimum spec. Not that the Mac Pro doesn't have nice video cards, it's just they're for CAD, they're not for gaming.
Yeah, different purpose, yeah.
Right, and so there's been some speculation that Apple may be entering into the VR game at some point because Tim Cook has made some comments about how, like, Apple will announce something on those lines when we've got an awesome product to announce because we don't do anything halfway. And a lot of people have kind of read in between the lines there saying that, so they are going to announce something as soon as they have, like, as soon as they're ready to announce it or whatever.
Meanwhile, Tim Cook's like, hey, guys, do we have any awesome products?
Right, yeah, and which they currently don't. So this
Where did Johnny Ives go?
The VR thing's
what,
actually...
What, you got a smaller iPhone? That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, 3 inches. 3 inches is what we'll do next year. It's
the VR thing is actually pretty cool. I've got an HTC Vive Pre, which is the almost final version of the HTC one. I have a Rift on order. And there are a bunch of HTC, or there are a bunch of VR games that you can play currently. The big glut is going to come in a couple of weeks when all these things are officially released. But, like, the Vive is, it's like there's a headset, and it's two, like, little wands you hold in your hands that are touch-sensitive, and it has a couple of sensors that you mount in your room, and you can actually move in within, like, sort of a however much space you've got. It might be, like, a 6 or 7 foot by 6 or 7 foot area and walk around in. The games, it's really hard to describe, but, you know, the first time all this came around was when I was considerably younger, you know, the early to mid-90s, this first wave of VR where everybody saw the movie
Lawnmower Man.
Now,
we're not talking about the Nintendo Power Glove, right?
No, yeah. Well, I mean, that's
that was a nod towards it. We thought it was available, you know, two years full.
It looked cool. Yeah. you know, and there was, like, that Dactyl Attack VR game that, like, they could go play at Dave & Buster's or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They actually had to sign up for that. That was a big deal, and I never actually really dug it.
The first time around, all of this was really immature and terrible. The technology wasn't there. The computers weren't there to push it. This time around, so I can tell everybody from having fiddled with this now for the past couple of weeks with this headset and played at some of the trade shows, that this is actually a big deal this time. This time it's going to work. They've got it right. Now, it's not going to be like world-changing, slap on the headset, go into the computer Lawnmower Man style and evolve into, you know, a being and the network.
Oh,
it's like none of that.
Yeah.
I'm canceling my order.
This time for sure.
Okay.
But the VR stuff, if you have a chance to demo it or you've got a friend who's buying it or buying it yourself, it's really, really cool.
So do you think that a lot of the new VR gear is going to supplant the 3D TV craze that people did or did not buy into?
I think the 3D TV craze was just, yes, is over, and it was just that.
Yeah.
The VR thing this time around is a much bigger deal. Also, the third player in the ring right now is PlayStation, which yesterday, just announced the PlayStation VR thing, which is a headset specifically. If you've got a PS4, a PlayStation 4, it's a headset for that. It's a little less expensive, but it's the same. It's the same deal. At this point, these things are of high enough visual quality to where everything looks really good. The tracking, motion-wise and positional, is essentially perceptive. Like it's essentially lag-free.
Most of you will not ERP or go into seizures.
Most people.
Hopefully,
won't.
Is what that equates into.
I mean, it's happening.
ERP
is
a technical medical.
Yes, it is. It's happening really well this time. I would recommend definitely trying out some VR experiences if you can get your hands on.
So we need to go to Lee's house. We're all going to Lee's house.
Everybody, come on over, man.
I hope you got enough tarps.
Got plenty of tarps.
Go read Penny Arcade.
Yeah.
Go read Penny Arcade.
Well, there's everyone. So, I mean, one of the demo applications that comes with the HTC Vive is a program called Tilt Brush by Google, and it's a 3D painting application. You put the goggles on, and you got the two wands in your hand, and one of them is to paint with, and the other is to select brushes and stuff with. you know, and you get in there, and, you know, the first thing you do is you hold the trigger down and you draw some swirls in the air in front of you, and that's really cool.
Write your name.
Yeah, right. Everybody write your name, you know, whatever. But then you have kind of this, like, aha moment when you, like, you know, your head moves or you step to the side and you realize that I really have drawn, like, this thing, and it's floating in the air in front of me, and I can step to the side and I can walk around behind it. And then you're like, what else can I draw? And then you draw, like, you know, like a 3D, like a circle in front of you with, you know, eyes and legs and whatever. Or you draw a tree. It's very subtle, but it's kind of amazing. It's, you know, it's really hard to describe. It's, you're actually painting in 3D without a canvas, like literally in three dimensions.
Did you ever have, like, I am a demigod kind of moment? I create worlds.
You can, so there's like a there's like a backdrop option you can change, and there are seven or eight different backdrops.
Can you blink out the universe?
Well, one of them is like a space backdrop, and there's like a moon floating like right here in front of you, and you can draw.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson suddenly.
Well, in one of the modes in there, they have one of the backdrops is it pops up like a dress form in front of you, like the kind of thing that you would use if you were sewing and you were like making clothing, like an actual you know, headless, armless mannequin form. And my wife went totally nuts with that because you can like take the wand and like draw, you can like draw clothes on this dress form.
I made a Lee hair doll.
It's cute, kind
from
of.
Your real hair.
Yes. No. it's totally cool. Pete, if you've got a gaming PC handy, I would recommend that you rush out and get yourself one of these.
Yeah, no, I have my stuff's all Apple hardware, and it's for work.
We've got a retraction or a correction to last week. We totally nailed PvP, player versus player, but apparently there are people in the video game world that don't play PvP, and they play something else called PvE, which we mistakenly said was player versus everything. It's player versus environment, which is kind of everything if you look at it that way, or also player versus enemy, or in some circles, player versus monster.
Oh, I've always heard player versus environment, yeah.
Yeah, it's player versus environment. Player versus monster, I think that last one's kind of exclusionary to actual monsters who game. So I would like to throw out PVM. But yeah, so we were wrong. Not player versus everything.
Player,
well, it depends on your style, though.
Environment.
Jay Lee will attack a chest full of brooms, I've seen, when it comes to...
Jay Lee did pretty good. Actually, Jay and his wife were over at my place
a couple
game? Weekends ago, and we did the VR thing.
Whoa.
Jay I have pictures. I tweeted pictures out of it of Jay.
Now, time out. Didn't Jay just have severe vertigo?
He did.
And you're putting... Was that before or after he got
so
the VR?
As we were, like, about to do this, I was like, okay, now, how is your, like, vertigo, like, going? If I put this headset on here, are you going to like,
kill the main host of the show?
I was really more concerned
not if the main host,
who's
going
like,
to, sorry,
puke
Pete.
All over my office. I was like, if I put this thing on your head, are you going to spew everywhere, and I'm going to have to clean it up, because... I like you, but I don't like you that much.
So, can you Teflon coat the rift, or how does that work? Or the
no, I would need a tarp in my office on the floor. No, Jay did fine. One of the games that I threw him into is called Job Simulator, and if you Google it,
do you get put on black turtlenecks?
No, the way in it, not Jobs Simulator.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Job.
One
simulator.
More thing.
If you're in front of your computer or near your computer and you can pull up a YouTube video of Job Simulator, the VR game Job Simulator, I highly recommend looking at it. It is truly hilarious.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
In 5 years, I see myself as giving up on real life and retreating entirely into VR.
Incorrect. You will buy more VR gear.
Strictly living in Job Simulator. It's actually really cool. It's hard to describe. Very blocky graphics. The two hand controllers that you're holding in real life show up as big cartoon glove hands in the game. And the demo is very, very brief. It just has you in like an office setting, and you can like... I don't know.
Use
the phone and turn the computer on and off. And so this is the last thing I'll say about VR, but it's kind of an interesting. It's an interesting observation in that when you play games, any kind of game, typically there is a learning curve. You know, you sit down, and modern games almost always will have some sort of tutorial they'll throw you through where they teach you very slowly. Here's how you use the mouse to drag around and click on the whatever. And here's how you...
Sometimes they'll disguise it like Halo would. Like, look up to, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Made up reason.
Typically you have some sort of, like, learning curve to go through, but when you all of a sudden transition this out into 3D and in a virtual reality kind of game... The learning curve, even though this may be the very first time you've jumped into a game in VR, the learning curve is typically very, very low because you, as a person, are already used to existing in 3D space.
You've learned how to walk and move and look around. You have certain expectations. So the fine motor controls that you have to go to the hands, which a lot of older adults have not gamed a whole lot, they may have. You know, you see someone try to turn left, they move the controller left, that kind of a thing.
Sort of. I mean, it was sort of like watching Jay and Job Simulator really, really threw this home. Like, I didn't have to tell him... like what to do. It's really
Don't
obvious
die
when
in the game.
Well, in the demo of Job Simulator, it's like you are literally standing in a cube, a tray comes up, and it's like, you know, you have to like eat donuts and make coffee and then turn your computer on. That's like literally what you do. But you open your eyes, you know, you put the headset on, you start the game.
So Jay excelled at that.
He was very good at that part. And then like you've got your two cartoon hands in front of you, and it's, like, really obvious. Well, I'm supposed to, like, pick a donut up. All right. And you just
do it. And then, you know, the game's telling me I need to turn my computer on, my fake in-game. All right, you turn around, like physically turn around, and there's your computer.
Oh, you forgot to include the TPS cover letter.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's you don't have to be taught how to do a lot of this stuff. You, as a person who exists in 3D space and is used to reaching out and doing things, immediately have context on how to do it. It's pretty cool.
So
let me ask you this.
Are there any, we talked, I think it was already been a week, but we mentioned Second Life. So are there any real estates that may get a Second Life? Will Second Life see a Second Life based on this? Or are they so dead that whatever pops up is going to be pop? It's going to be more or less the street from Snow Crash in Japan, because it's going to be Sony and
I would not give a second thought to Second Life.
I would like to keep the meme up, though. I think we can milk this.
the thing I
on
wonder.
Second thought, hold on. Yeah, but I'm.
How many years, Lee? How many years do you think it is between when? Because it does take very cutting edge hardware. Before that type of hardware would be at the mainstream level, so that then there would be more people. Because, you know, right now it seems like you have to really focus. You have to say, "Oh, I want to do VR," and so I've got to go. You know, it's way beyond. It sounds like it's kind of way beyond even when you want to go to sort of the ultimate video game. You know, mm-hmm. the old Crysis. You know, what's your frame rate in Crysis kind of deal. So I'm thinking about how, you know, to really for have it mainstream, it's got to get out of the, like, guy who knows what his video card really is to person who can hook it up to their computer, as long as it's kind of a current, you know, bought it in the past 6 months kind of computer.
The state, I saw some reports on integrated, and I say integrated, but let's just, they're still kind of discreet, but video cards and the video cards that are coming to mobile devices, and supposedly very fairly soon, so they were saying, like, you know, late 2017, there will be mobile video cards that will rival our consoles right now. So it would rival the current Xbox.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, right now, you can't get something like a high-end desktop video card into the TDP envelope that you've
heat,
got in a phone.
Space.
Right.
Mainly power consumption. Lots
but,
of reasons.
I mean, Pete, to answer your question, so there's already, like, the little Gear VR that you can get, the Samsung Gear VR, that's basically a... It's a headset you slip your smartphone into, and there's some gaming that you can do on it. It has
Google Cardboard.
Yeah. I mean, there's lower end things, but I mean, I see kind of what you're asking. You're asking, like, for, like, right now, if you want, like, the premium experience, right, then you're on the hook for, you know, you need your $1,000 PC, you need your $800 VR headset, you need your fancy expensive video card. And even the PlayStation, when the PlayStation VR, which is kind of the easiest thing to do because you don't have to worry about video cards and all that business. You just buy a PlayStation 4 and then buy the PS4 VR. Even that's a substantial amount of change. We're in that early adopter window where if you want to pay, as hackneyed as this sounds, if you want to play, you have to pay. It's kind of like, you know, DVDs in 1997 or whatever, right? You know, the DVD player was $1,000 and all you could get was, like, the George Clooney Batman movie. That was the only disc there was. Or, like, the two-sided version of Amadeus where you had to flip it halfway through. I mean, I would say if you want a rocking, awesome VR experience and you want it to be, like, outside of the early adopter, like, time frame, like, you were at least a year out. But if you look at, you know, summer of 2017 or whatever, I'm going to put my pin there and say that at that point you'd be able to, because you can already buy these VR ready PCs. I mean, Oculus sells them, I think, and they're partnered up with, like, Alienware and Acer and a couple of other OEMs where you could just buy the PC all in one that has the headset with it and all this whatever, and it'll cost you, I don't know, $1,500-$1,600 for a good one. But, like, for the person who doesn't want to know about, you know, which video card do I have to buy, how much RAM do I need, for the person who wants to basically, you know, put quarter in slot, pull handle, game comes out, wait another year and change and see where we are next summer.
ARM, so I found where I had to track down the story. So ARM actually came out and said, and right pretty much with Lee's prediction, they're saying, look, we're going to do a mobile chip. I thought it was more gaming, but they are saying mobile VR is what they want to do. They're saying our view is that mobile VR is a use case that can unlock the potential of mobile for hardware or for hardcore gamers. So look to ARM, and ARM powers a lot of the mobile phone chips out there. ARM does a lot of embedded stuff. The ARM chips, you know, as I guess, like, you look at, like, a at Millicent like that. ARM runs fast. They run pretty solid. Mm-hmm. And you see them in a lot of, you know, very secure systems. So this could be really cool if ARM, a big company, says like, hey, we're going to take what we have and we're going to make it super fast and aim it towards VR, mobile VR, in fact.
Well, we'll see. It's going to be an interesting, you know, 18 months or so now that we're finally getting these VR headsets are actually hitting market. I mean, it's been a long time coming. I think the Oculus Rift.
Well, that's been out for five or six years now, right?
I think they hit their Kickstarter in like 2012. I think. Don't quote me on that. Maybe it was 2013. But it's been a number of years that supposedly it's been like. It'll be early next year. It'll be early next year. And then next year, it'll be early next year. And then it's been like early next year for several years now. But these products are actually coming out now at this point. They're in the hands of, like, the engineering samples are in the hands of the press and the reviewers. I mean, they're out there. The Rift, I think, is formally available on, I think, March 28th.
All of these are shipping really soon to the point where we maybe could see something at the April Geek Gathering.
Potentially, yeah. Although we'd have to, I could probably bring my PC, but I would have to bring like the whole thing.
We have done that before. We have set up huge towers in the parking lot. We can do so inside under threat of rain.
My only reticence is that I have to. Well, no, I could bring one of them. We'll see. We'll see. Don't quote me on it. But if it's possible for me to bring something to the. Let's see, is the April Geek Gathering going to be on the...
It's around the 1st. It's very close second.
The hardware won't be... I won't have it by the 1st.
Let me see.
But
when
maybe
does
by
that
the May
hit?
One. Because I think the...
It is April 1st, really.
Yeah,
no
it's
joke.
April 1st. I won't have it by then, but I will by the week
now
after
I don't know
that.
What to trust. Whatever we say we're doing at the April
it's
Geek
all
Gathering,
lie.
You're not going to know.
I'll try to bring some stuff at some point, yes. Just be, you know... Don't break my
And then the thing that goes, so VR, the thing that goes hand in hand with VR, which you might start to hear bandied about too, is AR, which is AR.
Augmented reality.
Which is, you get like, you see what's in a room, but instead, you know, it could, you know, paint a name over someone's face or
Think
paint.
Terminator
you know.
Vision as opposed to Lawnmower Man.
Yes.
Yeah, augmented
responses.
That's going to be neat too. I think augmented reality is going to go a long way in, you know, everything from worksite stuff to server rooms
to
Microsoft, surgery to all sorts of applications.
Microsoft is going to be pushing in the field of augmented reality, Microsoft is supposedly going to be the leader there so far because they have the most it's not out yet, but they have the most mature pre-release product, the Microsoft HoloLens.
And they've been working Kinect. They've been working some
Yeah, but HoloLens aspects. Is really their thing for AR. And if anybody has seen, and this is all over YouTube, you can go out and look up the Microsoft HoloLens demo, and this is not Holo like HOLLOW. This is
HOLO.
Like HOLOLENS, Microsoft HoloLens. There are demos of people with the
holograms only live once.
Not
Holo.
Not H O L L A.
Not HoloLens.
C H A L L A A.
Holoback lens. There's plenty of demos to watch on YouTube of people doing, you know, neat stuff. Not necessarily just gaming. There's a demo that Microsoft ran like a simulated video, not an actual one with working products, but like a. There's a demo, a simulated one of a person with a HoloLens on talking to somebody else in a video conference, and the person that they're talking to is drawing on their field of vision on like where, like on like their sink to like turn the wrench to fix a plumbing problem or something, where like the person that they're talking to is actually like drawing. Like remotely on what the person is seeing in front of them. That's kind of cool.
Oh, that's awesome. So instead of going like, is there a doctor on the plane? They'll be like, is there anyone with a HoloLens?
Right.
On
yes.
The plane?
And the doctor will be like, cut here with the arrow. And like, this is where the appendix is. Just cut it like right, this dotted line.
Not to alert the passengers, but while we're handling that, do we have anyone with flight simulator experience? On board.
They also have an augmented Steve Ballmer where you can go into the developer's room and throw chairs at them.
Developers! Developers!
Can you paint someone's armpits a darker shade of blue than the rest of their shirt? That'd be awesome. Actually, you could clean that up in augmented reality.
You could. You could. You could make Balmer. Actually, you
eternally
know what?
Dry pits.
There was a YouTube clip of Balmer that just got posted of him like doing like a slam dunk competition off of a trampoline. Like he's clearly enjoying his retirement with his pet baseball team or his pet basketball team or whatever sports ball team he owns.
Oh, so time out. Was he actually doing that or someone actually?
No,
made
he
a
was
video?
Doing it. He was like, like just jamming
Whoa.
The ball in. He had a trampoline that he was jumping off. He wasn't like, you know, hooping it up himself. But yeah, I mean, Balmer is
developers.
As much stick as Balmer gets, you know, he's retired. He's clearly enjoying himself.
Is he a billionaire?
He is one of the 20 richest people in the world.
He's fine. He can buy more blue shirts.
He's doing fine and enjoying himself. You know, you can like his management style or not, but he probably doesn't care.
Nor should
really.
He.
Well, on non April Foolery date related stuff, it really looks like next week I should be in studio for the show. I have I have some business in Houston, so
what,
I should
we should all not
week.
Be here next week.
Or
okay,
will
he? No problem.
Yeah, no, I don't think we'll do that. But somebody has to show. Flicted has to show.
Yeah, you're going to be here. You just said.
Yeah,
that's all I need, man.
Yeah, well, I think I talk enough in some shows.
I might go out on a bottle. Brush Expedition, I think, is the name of the plant that could be exploding out there.
Well, I'm going to do the show in VR next week, just like with like simulated versions of you guys.
I'm going to go hang out with the only other person that's in Second Life and do the show from there. So I'll
do we have a studio in Second Life? A little
no.
KPFT
well,
studio?
Well, at one point, someone created something. So I know that I saw screen caps of people flashing up the in-studio webcam stuff we were putting out.
Uh-huh.
In Second Life. So it was like a picture of them sitting on a couch watching Second Life with us up
Lawrence
there.
I think Simon was the one.
He makes sense that he would do that.
Did they build like a little redheaded stick figure in there?
No, we were actually... So he had a couch and it was actually... He was streaming the audio through Second Life and then streaming, I guess, our whether it was webcam or full-on video, whatever we were doing at the time, putting it up on the wall. Like he had a huge 50-inch TV in front of the couch.
Okay,
just chilling out.
That is kind of cool.
That's what I'm saying. That's where you could be with augmented, you know, reality or virtual reality fairly soon, I think. Possibly.
Yeah, well, hopefully they'll improve on reality instead of just for us, for instead of augmented.
What needs to happen, everyone needs to go read Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash and study up on gargoyles and pizza delivery and maybe even like katana usage and then get back with the Sneaky Gathering.
Chop, chop.
There you go. Well, speaking of cool new stuff.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snark tank?
I think this first one, I think, is a product that might really help for virtual reality. The AMD... Dual Fury GPU, dubbed the Radeon Pro Duo, the card combines two of AMD's top-tier Fiji GPUs, as used in the Fury X and Fury Nano, onto a single card, resulting in a claimed 16 teraflops of computing performance.
That's a lot of teraflops.
The price for such power? Right around $1,500.
I was going to joke around about the SLI things earlier when Lee was talking about, you know, early video cards and what you had to do to get the gaming stuff. But that's kind of what they're doing here. They're lacing two together for a monster super duper.
This is like the old Obsidian X24 dual voodoo on a board.
Yeah, scanline interface where you'd have to link the two cards and let everyone, you know, each card would fill in every other line and you'd double
SLI. I think they're doing that one.
Yeah.
Most
of them are now, they're bundled onto the cards, but I think you can still SLI a couple cards.
They don't call it SLI.
Oh,
it's not the scanline interleave
anymore.
What's
it called now?
Scalable link interface.
I like how they kept the SLI though.
Yeah. Sorry, Pete, go ahead.
Yeah, misused acronym of the evening is SLI, right? As opposed to PVE. While the price may seem steep, it is substantially less than NVIDIA's most recent dual GPU offering. The Titan Z, which was about $3,000 and then dropped to $2,000. So you apparently do get a lot for your cash. Both sport the full array of 4,096 stream processors, 256 texture units, and 256 ROPs. I don't know what ROPs are, but I'm sure that it's important.
Rob. It's a unit of gaming.
Something to do with the Hamburglar. Robble, robble. There's 8 gigs of high bandwidth memory on board, split between the two GPUs, running at 1 gigahertz on a substantial 4,096-bit bus for 512 gigabytes per second of bandwidth. It is liquid-cooled via an all-in-one unit with 120-millimeter radiator. You know, it's amazing that now the specs on video cards, like, far exceed the specs on a full computer.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're very specific. They do one thing very, very well. And I think, Rob, and I'm making this up, but hopefully the guys that come in after us can pick it up, but it's something like render output or render operator or something, render operand, something along those lines.
The processes, maybe. The things though that make it a little different than a standard PCIe card is it is taller than a standard PCIe card, and so there are cases it won't fit in. And then there's the small matter of powering it. While AMD has not given exact power consumption figures, the Radeon Pro Duo requires 3 8-pin PCIe power connectors to function. the Fury X or Fury 10 typically consumes around 220 watts under load on average, although it can peak as high as 450 watts, which means you need a strong power supply to keep the juice flowing.
I want to say that it was 3DFX and the Voodoo 5, one of the like last cards that 3DFX released, actually just went ahead and had an external AC outlet and plug. And I'm wondering...
and you had to get a 3-phase outlet put next to your computer.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I'm wondering if when they're just going to go ahead and realize that, like, the PSU inside the computer is taxed to capacity, and rather than putting, like, a 1-kilowatt PSU, just give the thing an AC adapter and just have another plug.
Now, we should say this. Those that may not have an old card and have a new card, I think Blizzard just put out an update, first in 15 years, for Diablo 2 to make it playable
oh,
again. Although it did brick on some cards as well, so who knows if it solved more problems than it created.
So, we'll know that there's too much power needed for your video card when Tesla comes out with their, you know,
video card.
I'm waiting for Apple to come out like with a charging phone that if you get it too close to a hot video card, it just automatically charges.
Boom.
It's sucking power from everything it can find. A little bit closer to analog news, the self-tying, self-lacing Nike shoe from Back to the Future.
Dreamed about it for 30 years.
Last fall, Nike casually dropped a bomb. Yes, power lacing shoes were possible. In fact, not only were they possible, they were actually going to be something you and I could buy sometime in the near future. And it is now, because later this year, Nike announced that its first pair of self-lacing shoes will be hitting stores. Later this year, they're called the HyperAdapt 1.0, and they are not as clunky as the 80s-type kicks that Marty McFly was sporting in the movie. They're a lot more... It looks like a normal size shoe. It's not so giant. Of course, price to be determined. So you wonder how that goes. And the other thing I wonder is how do they keep power for it? Once the sensors get a read on your foot position, a series of tiny pulleys will contract the throat of the shoe tightly around the foot by winding thread around a spool. The wearer can adjust the tightness by pushing on a plus or minus sign on the left side of the shoe. Hold it down for 2 seconds, and the shoe will loosen fully, allowing increased blood flow and removal. I think that's editorial. It's in there from Wired. Eventually, Nike says it wants to make the micro adjustments automated and reactive to biometric data, so they adjust on the fly. I think they should make it where anybody who hacks your iPhone can tighten your shoes up, too.
Meanwhile, Velcro says... What?
Velcro says.
Nike says the shoes operate on a battery that will last for 2 weeks on a single charge. So you're going to have to charge your shoes. Or you'll have to remember to charge your shoes. You wonder what happens with What happens if you don't charge your shoes? Does that mean you
you're
walk
sleeping
around
in your shoes
floppy?
That night? Yeah,
they're all just floppy, or do they just not untighten if it's
fail open or fail closed?
Surely there's a safety release switch, but who knows?
Dead man's foot.
I would think that if they've got self-winding watches that just kind of work on, you know, that kind of motion, that they would be able to, you know, harness enough power to, you know,
like
power some self-tying shoes. Yeah, kinetic energy just through motions, or even like you could compress some, you know, foam that generates electric energy, you know, in the heel or something like that. Because that's, depending on which co-host you're talking about, you know, we're coming in deuce and a half. Who knows? It's a lot of energy.
Yeah, when the whole crew gets on an elevator, we always check that little plate.
We could power a couple pairs of shoes. We could maybe power a basketball team. Full of shoes.
So, and in other lower power, less priced stuff, because I'm sure these are less, I'm sure this next thing is less in price than a pair of self-tying Nikes or even a modest pair of Nikes. It's kind of cool. Have you ever thought that maybe the thing that the Raspberry Pi needs is a really good hard drive? Western Digital decided that it must. They have a 314 gigabyte drive that is specifically designed for the Raspberry Pi. It works more efficiently with Raspberry Pi than a standard hard drive and is compatible with WD Pi Drive accessories available at the Western Digital store. So it lets you have bigger projects with 314 gigs of capacity. It's under $35.
It's about the cost of a piece of pie. It's exactly the cost of a piece
of
pie.
Of a towel of two pies?
No, it's they did the pricing to where it's pie. If you call it the pricing, it's, you know, even the storage size is 3.14 terabytes.
31.42, okay. So they took the whole pie thing. Well, they had it on sale. The regular price is $45.81. And the only reason I'm mentioning the price is because the current sales price, on sale price, is $31.42.
Mm-hmm. Raspberry Pi, Pi Day.
3.14, yeah. So
I'm reading their product description page, and I love how they say under reliability, it leverages very mature HDD technology based off the WD Blue Slim Drive.
We're selling old drives.
We're selling old.
Well, but although it works for the Pi, you know, the Raspberry Pi, the key things are, you know, it has the power demand.
Low power consumption is a big deal. That's what it comes down to.
Match.
No, it's neat.
And I'm guessing size, too.
And yeah, it's a very slim drive. I think it's like 7 millimeters. It's very, very tiny. So it's not a big deal, not a bad deal. And that's a lot of storage. You can, you know, put a lot of music. You can put some video on there. You can track all kinds of data. Ton of room. And for actually, it's cheaper than a Raspberry Pi.
So, well, and just imagine, I mean, you know, yeah, it's old technology, but 300 gigabytes for $30 and change is pretty. It is amazing the capacities of data that we are getting that we could just carry around fairly cheaply on our persons. And I guess the last thing on Try By or Fry is one that I guess we'll have to. Jay can try it. I don't know if any of the rest of us has an Xbox One.
I'm doing that, in Windows 10 as well.
Windows developers will be able to build universal Windows platform apps for the Xbox One this summer. Microsoft finally confirmed that at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco today. One way or another, they've been telling Windows developers to think about running apps on a TV screen using an Xbox for more than 7 years. First as part of the, quote, three screens in a cloud vision, and more recently as part of the Universal Windows platform. Wow, Universal Windows platform. And then hearing about the augmented reality thing, that could really be universal.
That's cool.
Microsoft also said that the Windows Store and Xbox Store would be merged. So developing for phones, desktops, and tablets has always been more or less open, but even with even the gate-kept phone platform easy to access with no particular entry requirements, but the Xbox has always been the closed garden for Microsoft. Building traditional Xbox games meant buying expensive Xbox dev units, which were not available on the open market, with Microsoft exercising tight control over the finished game and being deeply involved in things like delivery of patches. But now the implication has always been that one day the Universal Windows platform would include the Xbox One, and now it's actually happening.
I was wondering when they were going to do that. I know we're on the way out here, but they did say that they're going to let everyone play Xbox games on Windows 10. So I was hoping it would kind of go both ways.
We'll
see. It looks like it is, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to watch.
And I need Lotus Notes on my Xbox.
This has been a grand little Technology Bites. In spite of Jay Lee's absence, we thank everybody for tuning in. We had a good time tonight.
Yeah, you've been listening to 90.1 FM Houston KPFT.
That's us, man.
This is Technology Bites. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's...
Roofhouse.
I won't
be here next week.
Some of us will see you next week.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Hi, I'm Hank Lamb from The Prison Show.
And I'm Grace Miller from Rehab Bar on the Bayou. We're here to tell you The Prison Show is going to rehab Saturday, April the 2nd, from 2 p.m. until midnight.
Tickets go on sale soon at $5 per person. At the door, tickets will be $10 per person or $15 per couple.
Bands include Plastic Flask, the Tom Turner Band, Kindred Spirits, Charles Bryant, Charlie Harrison, Crystal Sherelle, Wendy Elizabeth Jones, Dennis Price, and the fabulous Mitch Jacobs. So come out and support KPFT and The Prison Show.
Remember, Saturday, April 2nd, 2 to midnight at Rehab on the Bayou. Thank you for your support.
Thousands of you have heeded the call, but there's always room for more. You can find KPFT on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. From our latest updates to funny videos, contests, news, and more, you can find us anytime, day or night. We're at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd love to give you the latest. Plus, you're already on Facebook. Why not get behind the scenes of Houston's leader for independent music, arts, ideas, and culture right now? Again, find us at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. See you there.
Hello and welcome to Tell the World on 90.1 KPFT, where I totally forgot the intro music.
I was not prepared.
I know.
Yeah.
So I was going to pull it up real